two 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Taylor.
Hi guys, I'm Taylor, I'm an alcoholic. I'm so excited to speak tonight for AG. Thank you, Deborah, for asking me, and Gail for the call, and Liam for timing, and Rich for putting on the meeting, and everyone doing service here. I know how much work it takes, and I really, really appreciate it, and I'm so excited. I love AG so much. I love AA. I, like, miss you guys a lot, and I've been, it's like going to the church and standing up in front of everyone, and I feel as nervous as if I was doing it there, so I'm very excited to be here. Okay, so I'm Taylor. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 1st, 2012. AG is my in-person home group when we meet, like, in real life. I've got a couple different Zoom home groups going on in COVID. One of them is in Boston, the Beacon meeting, which I see a lot of you at sometimes too, which is awesome. I have a sponsor. Her name's Arisa. I love her so much. I talk to her regularly. This morning, in fact, I talked to her. I sponsor women. One of them I sponsor, her name is Beth, and you're here tonight, shout out, glad you're here, Beth. You do more for me than I do for you. And I really love AA, and I say those things, and then I have a home group, I have jobs in home groups. I've had jobs in home groups for the past, I'd say, 3.5-4 years, and those things don't keep me sober. The thing that keeps me sober is this connection with God. And I say that because I do all these things to connect to God, right? Like, that's my only shot in life. Otherwise, I'm really, really hopeless, really. I no human power can keep me sober. And I've tried everything. I've tried everything to keep me sober. And the only thing that works for me is God, which was inconvenient. Because I didn't really like that reality, but it works, and I'm really happy it did. So, and it continues to. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit of what I was like before I came to AA, what happened, and what I'm like now. And, I'll start off by saying I grew up in Kansas. That's where I was born. I remember having just, like, so much fun as a kid, and that's, like, my childhood, that's what I think of. I think of having fun. I think of getting angry at my brother. Like, he's a year and a half older than me, and he was, like, cooler than me, and he had, like, all the best friends, and, like, I just wanted to hang out with him, and I'd get mad if he couldn't let me hang out with him, But, like, as a kid, that was, like, that's pretty much it. I was pretty, like, I was a short-tempered child, but nothing, like, really out of the ordinary, I thought. I thought everything was, like, pretty normal. No big deal. And then I met this girl named Kaylee, and we were 12. I was 12. She was 13. Her sister was turning 16. And, she's like, oh, my sister's having this barn party out in the farm. And I was like, wow, I need to go to this barn party. She's like, boys are going to be there that are in high school. And it was like, this is it for me. Wow, I can't wait. She's like, there's going to be alcohol. And it was like, my mom was always like, if you drink before you're 21, you can become an alcoholic. And she would say all these things. And I thought that that was just, like, so rude. She would say that. And alcohol, like, really always fascinated me. I would always take little sips off my grandpa's when I would, like, give him the beer can. And the people that didn't drink, I thought were really boring. And the people that did drink in my family, I thought were, like, really, really cool. And they, like, knew how to have fun. And so when she told me there was this party out at this farm, I was like, what am I going to wear? It is on. Like, a week before, I got some new eyeshadow. I had my Aeropostale full outfit going on, brown shorts, pink top, and I didn't wear pink, but it was a special occasion, so I really went all out. And I remember going there, and they had this keg thing, and I remember drinking, and I was like, this is awesome, right? Like, oh my God. Like, I didn't know my shoulders were so high. Until I started drinking, and then it was like, I can talk to the boys. boys, they think I'm cute, which now I'm like, wow, that's like pretty creepy because I was 12 and I didn't go through puberty yet. And it had been years before I went to puberty and it was like I was a kid, but they thought I was cute. I was in my, yeah, had my eyeshadow. Everything was perfect and amazing. 5 minutes remaining, I saw that lamp. So that was like the best that the drinking really got, really. I could talk to people. I felt relieved. And at 12 years old, I chased that until I was 19. That's all I wanted in life was to drink. I was like, this is the answer for me. I can't do anything else. And this is how my drinking was. I would do it as often as I could, whenever I could. I went to school exclusively to find out how the parties were going and when the parties were going to be. And once I knew when the party was, I would feel relieved. And the only problem with that was what people thought about my drinking. I would drink to excess pretty much every time. Throw up everywhere, cry everywhere. People were taking care of me. You know, cops, you know, consequences, you name it. I didn't care at all. That didn't bother me. And so I just kept doing it. Consequences didn't matter. Because drinking did for me something so magical that I experienced that first night. And I was obsessed with the idea of when can I drink again? And once I drank, it set off this craving of where I couldn't stop. You know, I couldn't control how much I drank. There was no telling. And I didn't see a problem with that until it stopped working. The last time I drank, my shoulders were still up here. There was some moonshine. I had moved to Arkansas, and there was a moonshine that, like, you know, my cousins had brought. And the moonshine didn't work. And there was a lot of it. And it just, it didn't do anything. And so I was like, try some other stuff. Didn't work. And then it was like, do I, like, kill myself now? Or, like, I guess I go to AA? Like, I knew, like, alcohol was, like, a strange thing for me. Like, I drank differently than others. But I was really out of options, and it happened really quick. And I got to this place of, like, my one solution in life didn't work anymore. And so I came to AA. And for a few years, you know, I came to a lot of meetings. I got sponsors. I did some steps. Then I got boyfriends. And then I, you know, found some other things that could keep me, like, just, like, a little bit relieved without, like, blowing the top off, right? Like, lots of yoga. And, you know, I tried literally everything I could try without doing all of the steps. And what had happened was I got to a place in sobriety where I wanted to kill myself. I was like, this is terrible. Like, sobriety sucks. Like, it's been 4 years of going to these freaking meetings, and I feel worse than I did when I came in. And, you know, my now sponsor was like, sat me down, went through the bedevilments, and basically said, you know, you have untreated alcoholism, and, like, we can do all the steps, and, you know, you can feel better, probably, and if, you know, it doesn't work, then maybe you don't have alcoholism. You know, I now know I'm convinced I am the real and hopeless alcoholic, and, you know, what happened for me, like, on page 11 in Bill's story is that he's talking to his friend that came and saw him. On page 11, it said, I saw my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing.
The second 10-minute speaker is Alan.
Health labels on it, some medical labels, but, you know, whatever it is, you know, that was a part of me, you know, and still is to some degree, although now I have God and so many beautiful tools to work with it. So, you know, I didn't start drinking until college, until I was 19. And I tried a lot of things to try to feel comfortable, to feel good about myself, you know, when I was growing up, to fill that hole that we all talk about, the God-shaped hole, God-sized hole. You know, I tried reading, food, romantic relationships, you know, video games, all sorts of things. And you know, I was a very passionate person, and I would really get into everything that I got into, and that's still the case for me, you know. And now I'm really passionate about recovery, and I'm really passionate about God and, you know, my work and all these kinds of things. So, you know, it's not so much that I've completely changed since I've gotten sober. To some degree I have, but I've also learned how to channel those things, you know. But I relate a lot to Bill's story, where he had a lot of drive. And when I was going into high school, you know, just as Bill says, you know, that he saw many people making millions. And I thought, You know, my teachers always told me if you apply yourself, you know, you could really do great things. And I thought, you know, why not I? You know, why not I be at the top of the class? You know, why not I be a champion athlete? You know, and I started putting all that drive that I felt into those things. And, you know, it really worked for a little while, in a sense, because it built up my ego. And, you know, I just wanted to feel safe. You know, I'd been bullied a little bit when I was young. You know, that's not what makes me an alcoholic. It's very complicated. And I do think I have just the brain chemistry of an addict. I think that's the biggest factor. But, you know, I thought if I prove myself, if I'm the best at what I do, then I'll feel good about myself. I'll feel safe. Other people will respect me. And, you know, to some degree that worked, but it didn't fill up that hole. You know, and I ended up moving away, far away from home. And I went to an elite college that I worked so hard to get into. And when I set foot on campus, I literally thought that if I didn't win a Nobel Prize, that I was going to be a failure, you know, and there was ego in that. But I also just really wanted to do something good with my life. I thought I owed it to the world, to my parents. I'm an only child of two wonderful parents, and I'd had a great education. And I thought, you know, I have to do something great, and that's what I want to do. You know, I want to help the world and save the world. And but that's not what happened. You know, I had no idea what I wanted to win the Nobel Prize in, which is a problem. And I also didn't really know how to make friends. You know, I had judged everyone around me growing up and kind of kept people at arm's length a lot of the time. And that's what I did when I got off to school. And, you know, I build up a lot to that first drink, because it really, once I took that first drink, the story was kind of over. You know, I had a very fast progression. The first time I drank, I got super drunk and didn't like it. But the second time, I had a few beers and I smoked marijuana, and it was just that perfect combination. I had a white light experience. You know, it was that stereotypical experience. You know, I had thought that drugs and alcohol were for losers growing up, and literally, with a switch flipped in my brain. I truly believe that. You know, once that those chemicals hit my brain, it's like my brain was rewired and I had a new priority in life, you know, which was to feel that good as much as I could. I got my 5 minutes. Thank you, Leo. So, you know, I started setting all the rules just like it talks about in the big book, you know, only weekends, only at night. But very soon I was a daily drinker. And yeah, did a lot of different drugs, a part of my story. You know, I switched deck chairs on the Titanic, as they say, a number of times. And within a few years, I went to my first meeting. And I had a total moment of grace that brought me to that first meeting. You know, I knew I needed help. I had a really kind guidance counselor who I shared that I was struggling. And I went to this meeting. And I tell you what, I saw the magic of AA right away. You know, I had been reading a bunch of hippie spiritual books, you know, Ram Dass and stuff like that. And I was a philosophy major, and I'd always wanted to find the meaning of life and to find purpose and to find God and all that stuff. So I was totally down with the steps. And, you know, I went to my first meeting, and this woman sat down next to me, and she smiled so brightly, and she just asked me how I was doing. And I really felt God in that room, and I felt magic in that room. That wasn't enough to keep me sober, unfortunately. I was 22, and I thought, you know, hey, this is probably just a phase. If I find the right relationship, if I figure out what I want to win the Nobel Prize in, you know, I'm not going to throw that stuff away for drugs and alcohol. So I left AA after a few months, and I didn't pick up right where I left off. I was very cautious at first, but it cranked up, and it cranked up, and you know, to make a long story short, I went back to school for music, which I thought was my dream. And I had a wonderful relationship, the best one that I'd had up to that time. And I threw those away for drugs and alcohol. And the last couple of years were very dark. I mean, just gross, dark, by myself, so isolated, you know, no sleep cycle, no diet, just complete mess. And I'd given up. You know, and I really, I went somewhere really dark, and I thought, man, you know, I don't know if this life thing is for me. You know, I don't know how I can ever get back on track after all this. You know, I'd had so much promise, and here I am, and I could not look myself in the mirror. You know, I knew that the way I was living was a waste of my life, you know, and a slap in the face to God, if God existed, and certainly to my parents, and I felt so awful about it. And I really knew that my only two choices were just to give up in whatever that means, or to go back to AA. And by the grace of God, I came back to AA. And, you know, I wish I could go into so many more details, but I ended up pretty early on. I reconnected with someone I had met the first time I was sober, and he had gone to Atlantic Group. And I had too the first time. I thought it was a little much back in 2008, but in 2012, I came into Atlantic Group, and I actually had that thought. I thought, man, I might like that Atlantic Group thing this time, you know, because this time was different. I was so defeated. I was desperate. I had that gift of desperation. And I ended up meeting a sponsor from this group. He swooped into my life so dramatically. It was an absolute God moment. I believe that to this day. I'd been working with another sponsor who had kind of ditched me the day before, and he didn't know that. But he came all the way across the room, and he said he'd been looking for me. He said he heard me share at this other meeting, and that he thought that I could get this, and that he wanted to be my sponsor. And that was the only stroking of my ego he would do for about 6 months. But it meant the world to me, you know, and I dove in. You know, I worked the steps quickly and thoroughly, and I started opening my heart to a God that I didn't understand. I have 1 minute left. You know, I don't understand God at all. The world is difficult, as we've all experienced this summer. But what I can say is that there's so much love in the world, and there's so much magic in the world, in other people, in AA, in music, you know, in so many things. And, you know, I try to look for that every day. When I was counting days, I heard somebody say, if you're seeking God, you've already found God. And I cling to that. You know, for me, it's a daily seeking. And it literally was like a rebirth for me. You know, I have 30 seconds left to try to explain that, you know, there's more magic and excitement. My life was so boring back then. I thought it was exciting, but it was so boring. And there's more magic and excitement in one day today than there was in so many months back then. And I just love you guys so much. You know, I'll close with this. I'm getting to show up for life today, you know, for the fun things, because I do think getting sober is about going for our dreams and having fun and living a full life. And it's also about showing up for the tough things. And my mom has Alzheimer's, which is really difficult. She's slipping away, but I'm getting to be here for her and love her. And because of you guys and because of AA, she's seen me happy for years. And I'm so grateful for that. And we have such a joyous relationship despite the struggle. And whenever I speak, she always says, you know, tell all those people in AA that we love them and we're praying for them. So my mom is praying for you. So am I. And it's just such a gift to be here. Love you guys, and hope I help somebody tonight. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. My name's Jackie. I'm an alcoholic. It is so good to be here. Thank you so much for allowing me to share with you tonight. I am so impressed with this meeting. I am impressed with the structure. I am impressed with the participations. I am impressed with Taylor and Alan. Thank you so much for your share. I too love my life. I too love Alcoholics Anonymous. And happy birthday to the people at birthdays and the newcomers. I'll say what was told to me when I first came in is, yeah, you never have to live that life again. I was 44 and I was shocked. I did not know that. I really believed I was destined to live the life I was living. And the other one was, you never have to take another drink again if you don't want to. In fact, you don't have to take another drink again if you do want to. And that's a promise. And it's so good to be here. You know, I'd like to share at the beginning that there's a saying on one of our Alano clubs painted on the wall. And it says, I may not be what I want to be. I may not be what I could be. But thank God I'm not what I used to be. And I can tell you every day of my sobriety, I say that. Thank you, God, for my sobriety. because it is a gift. And I love the fact that my creator has given me the awareness to know what a gift sobriety is. And I truly love my life. I just, you know, a half hour, it's hard to, I'm going to talk really fast because there's rolling blackouts. So hopefully I won't black out. So I'm going to talk real fast to get everything in case they do it. But, you know, the only thing I talk about in my childhood is I was born in Memphis. When I was 1 year old, my mom and dad and sister moved to Cleveland, where I was raised for 31 years. And my mother had my brother then. And when I was four, my dad went to the store for cigarettes and never came home. And my mom, who was uneducated, away from her family, we ended up in the projects. And, you know, I did not know at that time, until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, how truly lost she was. And so she did what she, the only thing she knew how to do is she got married again. And she married a full-blown alcoholic, a gambler, a womanizer, and a complete physical and mental abuser of us. And I hated him. I hated him from my toes to my head. And I hated my mother for staying married to him for 15 years. And in the book, it talks about that alcoholics are incapable of forming a true partnership with another human being. And that was me. And I don't know if it's because of my childhood, but I'm sure it had a big part in me not being able to form any type of relationship with my children, my family, my creator, myself. You know, the other thing I talk about in my childhood is, even with all the violence, even with all the anger, I don't know why. I have no idea. It was nothing about me, but I was an optimist. And I could get through everything by just knowing it's going to be better. I just know it's going to be better. I just know it. And my mother, who was a manic depressive, she was not an alcoholic, she'd always say, Jackie, you're going to see the world is going to beat you down. Men are going to use you. They're going to abuse you. The world's going to beat you down. And I would say, no, that's not true. No, I know it's going to be okay. And the last thing about my childhood was that, you know, in the book, it talks about within every man, woman, and child lies the fundamental idea of God deep within them. And I know that for a fact, because we never went to church. I don't even remember. Maybe they did. I don't remember ever hearing the word God in our home. And yet I knew instinctively that there was something out there. And when I wanted to get away from the violence and the anger, I would go outside and lay in the grass or sit on the sidewalk, whether it were day or night, and I would just stare at the sky, and I would begin to talk and ask questions like, why? A lot. Why? What am I here for? Why am I here? Why is this like this? And for some reason, the longer I stayed out there, the more peaceful I got. And I was able to keep that peace and talk to this thing out in the sky that I didn't have to describe, I didn't have to name, but that gave me great peace. And I had that until about 5 years before I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through school. I was a good student. The one thing in school I can tell you about is about 10 or 12 years old, I got on a treadmill, and I turned it on high, and I ran. I don't know what I was running to or running from, but I kept running. And I did that also until I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had no goals in school. We didn't have the money to go to college. We didn't have the money to even community college. It was never talked about. So I knew I would go to work. My only goal was to get out of that house. So when I was 19 years old, I met a man and went out on a date. And when I tell my talk, I talk a lot about, within every person's life, in their life on this Zoom and in the world, something will happen to you that in a split second, you will never be the same. You'll never be the same when this might happen. And it might be a good thing. It might be a tragic thing. But we are changed in that moment. And at 19 years old, that happened to me. He took me to my first bar. We went to go see his ex-girlfriend, the belly dancer. You should have known then. And we went in there, and in a split second, I was changed forever. I loved it. I loved the laughter, the smoke, the dancing, everything about it. I loved it. But then when I took that drink, that first drink, in a split second, Jackie, as I might have been, could have been, should have been, was changed forever. because in that moment, I began a volatile relationship with alcohol. And I did that in a violent world until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up marrying that man, and we lived in bars. He lived in his bars, I lived in my bars, and we did things people in bars do. And that fundamental idea deep within me, which I call my conscience, I knew I wasn't doing the right thing. I knew it. And the more I did it, the more I drank, because I had to forget what I was doing the night before. And I didn't know what else to do, you know, and I was just running. I was working in bars and just cheating and lying, and I was just married. That lasted for about 3 years, and I needed a way out. Everything was always, I need out there. Something out there is going to fix me in here. And so I had a child, and I had my son. And when I was in the hospital and I held him in my arms, I said, you will never come from a home like I did. I vow to you right now. But you see, that relationship with alcohol was much stronger than the relationship with my son. And I wasn't lying. I meant every word of it. And my husband was going out in bars, and so I started going in the bars again and leaving my son. And I ended up having a daughter, too, and then I was leaving both of them with babysitters and living in those bars. And, you know, by the time I was 26 years old, I got divorced and living in a bar, and I met another man in a bar. And this man, you know, he looked like Don Johnson from Miami Vice, and I thought, oh, wow, if I get him, I'm going to be okay. And I tagged up with him. Unfortunately, he was my stepfather all over again, and he treated my children like I had been treated. And I thought, what have I done? I started going to my first psychiatrist when I was 19 years old. I probably was on my fifth by my second marriage. And I knew I was doing the wrong thing, and yet I could not. All I knew, the only thing I knew was my solution was alcohol and running. I have to get away. I can't be here. It's going to be better over there. And I ended up divorcing that man, and I was living in the bars, leaving my kids with babysitters. I started working in the bar. I worked at a bank during the day, always successful worker, always had phenomenal jobs. And I was working in a bank during the day, but I was running. And so I was cocktail waitress at night and a bartender on Saturdays. And in that bar on Saturdays, I met this man who told a lot of jokes and danced a lot. And I thought, that's what I need. I don't need Don Johnson. I don't need the first one. I need him because he dances and he tells jokes. And if I do that, then I'm going to be okay. Always out there. And I got engaged to that man, and we lived in the bars. My kids ended up going to live with their father. And the guilt was so overpowering to me. And I would go outside and I would talk and I go, what is wrong with me? Why do I do these things? I don't know why I do these things. And the psychiatrist never said it. They said it was my childhood. They said things that happened to me when I was a child, it was there. You know, they never said it was alcohol. And so, you know, I just in fact, one time I asked, way in the future before I came in the program, I asked this guy, do you think I drink too much? And he goes, no, your life sucks. I go, oh yeah, that's right. That's why I drink. I knew that was the reason. And anyways, I went with this man. We got engaged. We were going to get married, but he got hooked on cocaine. And oh, I was far too good for cocaine. I mean, I'm a drinker. I'm high class, you know, in the low class bars, I'm high class. And I went with him, and he got very violent with me too. It was just a pattern with me. And so one night he came over and I was trying to break up with me, and he wouldn't let me break up. He kept saying, you're not going to break up with me. And then all of a sudden he just stopped and he looked at me and he cocked his head. He said, it's over. And I said, yes, it's over. And he got up, he walked into my kitchen, he pulled out a drawer, pulled out a knife, and stabbed himself to death. And his last words to me were, I effing hate you. And in that moment, again, in a split second, Jackie, as I knew her, was never going to be the same. And, you know, I loved books. I read hundreds, Power of Positive Thinking, and I'm Okay, You're Okay. And I was always searching, and I just couldn't find peace. And I stood over, you would think that I would think, look what alcohol has done to my life. That's not what I thought. You know, when I got sober, I got my master's degree when I was 56 years old. And I took a class on battered women syndrome because I had been a battered woman, and so was my mother. And there was a condition called, a syndrome called battered women syndrome. And that's where you're beat down so much, man or woman, that you begin to believe you're an abuser, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're no good, you'll never get anywhere without me. And it's called learned helplessness. And I believe in that moment I had what was called learned hopelessness. And I remember thinking, my mother was right. There is no hope. I'm just evil. I'm just no darn good. That's what it is. And I began to live my life as a woman that was no darn good. But I had good jobs. I was an executive as a bank because I could put on this facade. And inside, my soul was dying. And I was trying to push God away, and I didn't know what to do. And as my on my Saturday night job, bar job, I met somebody from Arizona. And I thought, I know, I'll go to Arizona. If I go to Arizona, then I'll be okay. Because it's sunshine. And I took my daughter with me, and I went to Arizona. Well, that didn't work out either. It was the same type of marriage. And finally, it was 7 years later, that I was having lunch with the girl. I was an executive at a bank, and I had to go on a sales call. And I was with this young girl. It was in 1993. And I was with this young girl. She was in mortgage lending. I was in construction lending. And we had to get this client. And I was drinking my lunch after we got the client to sign the papers. And I said, would you like a drink? And she said, no, I don't drink. And I go, well, do you think I drink too much? She goes, well, I don't know. I don't even know you. And she said, but you know what? I have a friend, and he goes to this place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and he hasn't drank in 18 years. And I said, why? And I didn't know why, but I pushed that aside, and I was to drink a little bit more. I know I'll get a psychiatrist. And so I ended up going to a psychiatrist, and she suggested I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to her, and I went to my very first meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, and I heard, this was in 1993, and he was elegantly dressed, like you guys, wonderful, I love how you're dressed up. He was elegantly dressed, and he talked about living in a dumpster, and eating out the streets, and being in prison, and having DUIs. I had never been in prison. I had never had a DUI. I had never eaten out of a garbage can, so I went back to her, I said, I'm not an alcoholic. And she goes, we'll go back next week. And I went back the next week. And I came back. I said, well, I don't know. She goes, we'll go back next week. I did this for 8 months. I am, I'm not. And 8 months later, in November of 1994, I came home from an appointment from her. And I was done. I was done. I couldn't do it anymore. I had over that 8 months, joined seven different churches trying to find God. I joined a Lutheran church, a Baptist church. In the Baptist church, they baptized me in front of the whole church. And there were like 700 people in that church. And when he pulled me out of the water, all I saw were 1,400 eyes looking at me going, who are you kidding? I couldn't wash it off. You know, I just couldn't run fast enough. But I came home from the psychiatrist that night, and I was so broken. I was mentally, physically, and spiritually broken. I couldn't do it anymore. I was like a feather. There was absolutely nothing inside me. My daughter had gone back to Cleveland, and I was all by myself, living in a basement apartment, drinking my vodka every single day. And I lay down on that living room floor, and I cried out to that God that I had pushed away. And I said, I didn't say, help me quit drinking. I still didn't know I was an alcoholic. Even with my job, I was an executive at my job, and they had me go to school for alcoholism in the workplace. I still didn't know I was an alcoholic. All the books I've read, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew everybody else in my life was an alcoholic, but not me. And I laid down on the floor, and I didn't say, help me to stop drinking. I said, God, please change me. Please change me. And 15 minutes, okay. Please change me. And I got up the next morning, and something happened. I couldn't stop crying. And just like I always did, I got dressed up in my Liz Claiborne suit. I got my briefcase. I went to work, but I couldn't stop crying. And I canceled all my appointments. I shut my door to my office, and I just sobbed. I couldn't stop crying, and I didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, a young girl's voice that had said to me, 8 months prior to that, there's a meeting at 445 on Ina Road, and my friend hasn't drank in 18 years. And I got up, I walked into my boss's office, and I said, Fred, I think I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to an AA meeting. And he goes, okay. And And so, you know, I left at 4:30, left work, and I was still sobbing, and I was driving. It's sunny in Tucson. It was the most beautiful sky. And even in a distance, I could see the dome of that church. It was an Episcopalian church. And I could even breathe a little bit just seeing the domes. And yet on this shoulder, I heard, you're never going to laugh, you're never going to dance, you're never going to sing, you're never going to have sex. And I haven't danced and sang in a long time. And but on the other shoulder, I just said, I just want to be different. I just want to be different. Change me. And I walked into that meeting, and I sat way in the back, and I had my arms folded, and I was sobbing. And all of a sudden, it was as if that God that I had as a little girl put his hand on my shoulder and said, it's time. And I went, oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic. And I knew at that moment, Jackie, as I knew her, was never going to be the same. I knew I ceded to my innermost self. I knew to the depths of every cell in my body, I was an alcoholic. And all of a sudden, I heard everything you said. I believe I did steps 1, 2, and 3 in that floor the night before. I had totally surrendered to this program. You know, my life began to change, actually for me, instantly. When I had conceded, because my ears were open, I heard, you never have to live that life again. And I went, I don't. I was 44. That was in November of 1994. And I said, I don't. I don't have to live that way. I'm not evil. And I never have to take another drink again if I don't want to. I proceeded to continue to do the steps, and my life changed totally. I made peace with my stepfather. I made peace with my mother through the fourth step. Because I had asked God for the willingness to forgive. I made peace with my children. I will tell you, for 3.5 years, I was doing wonderful. I was Miss AA, I was GSR, I was secretary of the meeting, I had sponsees. But I had 2 character defects that I had carried from childhood, even after I did the steps, that I would go to my grave rather than you think I was stupid or weak. And I was having things happen in my life, and they had named me Happy Jackie at my meeting. Happy Jackie. And I couldn't tell anybody I wasn't happy, or I was afraid, even my sponsor. And everybody would say, how you doing, Jackie? I'm doing fine. I'm doing, well, you don't seem fine. No, I'm doing fine. And in that process, I took some Vicodin, a couple of Vicodins. And that was in July 11th, 1997. And I changed my sobriety at that time. Once again, I was changed forever, because I had reached a new level of my honesty, realizing that these character defects, that 6 and 7, were so important in my life that I can't, you know, we don't have secrets. The secrets have us. And I was carrying those secrets. And even though the outside was okay, I still had that burning on the inside. And I knew I had to have a new level of honesty. The other thing that happened in 1997 was in October of 1997. I met a man that had been in my home group, who was from California, but was in my home group in Tucson. And he had gone away for a couple years, and he came back, and he asked me out on a date. And we were married 6 weeks later on the beaches of Maui. He had 27 years of sobriety. I had only had 4 months since I had changed my sobriety date. But we had the program. We both loved the program. You know, we had God, the program, and our relationship. We worked the steps. We had sponsors. We did everything together. For 18 years, we traveled all over the United States. We lived part-time in Maui. You know, we went to 4 international conventions. And in 2015, our 18th year being married, we went to the Georgia convention, and it was wonderful. It was just incredible. We had people from Cleveland, where I was raised, Tucson, where I live, Minnesota, where he was raised, California, Maui. It was unbelievable, this gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had actually been able to form true partnerships with other human beings. I mean, true and good relationship with other people. I mean, what a gift of the program. And you know, we went farther up, and we went to visit my family. It was my sister's 50th wedding anniversary. Here I had been married 4 times, and here I was celebrating her 50th wedding anniversary. And we just had a wonderful time. We took Alcoholics Anonymous with us all the way, and my kids were there, and my grandkids were there, and it was just incredible. And we were dancing and eating, and all of a sudden he looked at me, and he said, "I feel faint." And all of a sudden he fell in my arms. He had had an embolism to the heart. And once again, in a split second, I was changed forever. I'm not sure how much time I have. I haven't had any buzzers, so I'm kind of lost here. In a split second, I was changed forever. It was like I was a newcomer all over again. Everything that I had learned, it seemed that it was in a fog, because this great relationship that I had with this man was unbelievable. And we had done Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, when I came back to California, I flew back with a friend, and 3 weeks after he had passed away. And I was on shaky ground. 7 minutes. I was on shaky ground. It was like I couldn't concentrate. The grief was so enormous to me. And all of a sudden, I wasn't married anymore. All of a sudden, my program was going to be different. All of a sudden, my life was going to be different. And when I came into my morning meeting, when I got out of the car, all the smokers lined up, and each one of them hugged me and sobbed with me. And then when I walked into the room, everybody stood up, went into a line, and hugged me and sobbed with me. And they have been on this journey. That was 5 years ago. I have been on this journey since then, that what I had realized is life is going to change. We get older. We have children. They get married. They leave. They come home. They leave again. You know, our bodies change. Our minds change. Our states change. But what I had realized in my journey of that grief, oh, sorry, a little emotional, was that everything changes except Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what I had realized is the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous never change. You know, that honesty and faith and hope and courage and willingness and humility and brotherly love and God conscious and service, all those principles behind the steps never change. The steps don't change. So I did the same thing that I did when I was a newcomer. I called my sponsor. I answered my phone to my sponsees, even though it hurt so badly, even though I just didn't want to, but I continued to do that. I went to a meeting every single day, and my life began to heal a little bit. And even though, you know, there's an emptiness, there's such a fullness in my life because of my Creator. I call my life energy beyond my understanding, because in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is an energy beyond my understanding. Out in the world, there is an energy beyond my understanding that has carried me through my life. You know, when Don and I got married, he had 46 years of sobriety, by the way, when he passed away. And you know, we had gotten married on the beaches of Hawaii, and we had a favorite song. And it touched my heart so much. I quote songs in movies. I lived in movies and songs as growing up to get me away from everything. So I quoted a lot. The one song is, it's called The Gift. And there's a line in that song that says, "You gave your love away. I'm grateful every day. Thank you for the gift." And that was my gift from him for each other. But I thank you for the gift. I thank you for the gift of my life, for showing me that there's hope and faith and unity that can be expressed sometimes in the world out there that I can't see. You know, I thank you for the gift of giving me my family back, my children back. My son is 47 years old and he calls me every other day. He's 6'6". He's got a really deep voice. And every time he calls me, he goes, "I love you, Mama. How you doing?" You know, my daughter and I had a big struggle, but we are so close right now. You gave me that back. You gave me my Creator back, one that I can depend on, one that is there with me. I think it was Taylor that said that, is always with me, and I think Alan said that too. And the other thing that I want to say is, well, there's two things, I guess. I like music too, and there's a line in another song that Mary Martin sang, and it goes, "A bell is not a bell till you ring it. A song is not a song till you sing it." And love is not love until you give it away. And I thank you for giving your love away and showing me how to give my love away. And the last thing I want to say is Natalie Cole and her, she was a drug addict, alcoholic. Sorry, I always get emotional. And at the end of the movie, she said, I have been given the grace of God. I may not deserve it, but I'm not going to waste one moment of it. And neither am I. Thank you.